You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Well, it's been, let's say, interesting to, you know, to say the least. 2020, which was going to be probably the most busy year ever for me. It turned out to be the least busy, and I sort of just sat around thinking about what I should do. I had no idea.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope you've had a glorious weekend and a glorious week before that. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter, and they have a whole bunch of amazing gigs coming up. But we have just announced the brand new edition of Heavy Montreal Presents Vox and Hops Brutal Montreal 2022. Which will be taking place on September 2nd at Corona Theater. This year's event features Deicide performing their classic album Legion in its entirety with support of Cataclysm, who will be performing their classic album Serenity and Fire in its entirety and Inhuman Condition. I am just so damn stoked that Brutal Montreal 2022 is coming up. You should absolutely grab your tickets for this event because they are selling extremely quickly, and if you plan on coming to this unique metal and beer festival, well, then you should absolutely go pick them up soon via the link in the description of this podcast. Trust me, you're going to want to be there to hang out with me and enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. I am so stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's anyone in this world that you would love to attend Brutal Montreal 2022 with, you should tell them that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. Your concert buddy, someone that you would like to come drink craft beer with while headbanging, jumping into a mosh pit while listening to Deicide and Cataclysm, well, tell them that the podcast exists. If you would encourage one of your friends to become a future Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm with Matthias Lilman of Fintroll and Oceans and Dispit. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 335.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today I'm with Matthias Lilmans of Fintroll, Dispit, and Oceans, and many, many, many other projects. Matthias, you're a very, very, very busy man. And let's just jump into the thick of it. I love to start these episodes with a shitty question so we can have much more fun later. Take me to how you coped with the glorious years of 2020, 2021, and hopefully not 2022. How have you been surviving the apocalypse?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been, let's say, interesting to, you know, to say the least. It's 2020.
It's never ending.
Right now. So 2020, which was going to be probably the most busy year ever for me. It turned out to be the least busy, and I sort of just sat around thinking about what I should do. I had no idea what to do. You know, we had gigs, we had lots of things going on. I think I ended up canceling 86 gigs.
Holy shit.
2020.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't do anything. I lived off checks from the state. I was like unemployed for the first time in ever. And but some stuff happened, and last year turned out to be the busiest probably in my life ever, but in another way, with lots of other things instead. And I sort of changed directions of everything I'm doing. And but let's talk about that in a later. But I've been busy. Yeah, I've never been this busy.
Which is a good problem to have. So you went through, the 2020 was a massive year. Mm-hmm. You dropped three full length albums, all
I did
massive projects, all on big labels. very busy, working full-time as a musician is what you were referring to before.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it's just all gone. So
yeah, everything is taken away.
It was a tough
sweeping the carpet.
Very tough year for you. I'm happy that you turned it around. I'm definitely going to dig in deeper into that later, but I see you're serving yourself a beer, so let's jump into this. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. Now, what did you just crack, and what are you about to showcase right now?
Well, this is... I actually have no idea where this is from. I'm hoping this is good, because I'm right now, as you can see, I'm not in my... in my studio right now. I can see all this cool Lego in the background there. So I was hoping to have some local beers from my hometown, but I'm not in my hometown. I'm actually in And Ocean's rehearsals. Just came out of the sauna. That's why my hair is still wet.
And so Finnish. I love
we
it.
We went to the local market to get some beers. And this is Market Porter. Thornbridge, I think that's... somewhere in UK islands, probably. And during winters, I like to have dark beers, and let's see.
Hell yes. On my side, I'm going to be drinking something that's very familiar to me. This is one of my most recent collabs that came out for the 3-year anniversary of the podcast. This is Double Vox and Overhops from Overhop Canada. It is a double New England IPA, 8.5%.
Ooh.
I'm going big. I'm going big at 2 p.m. with you, Matthias, and that makes me happy. I'm going to pour this out. As I pour this out, I'd love to hear about your very first beer. Do you remember the first beer that you ever drank?
I was really young back then. I remember my parents. I had really young parents. And we had all these parties at home, and they were this kind of parents that let you try, you know, some like have a sip of what they were drinking. And I was really young when I had my first sip of beer.
How about the one that you enjoyed and you finished, though?
Oh, I remember first time, well, I didn't buy beer, but that I had a beer underage. I didn't like it. I think I had 3 beers that night or something, and still wasn't good.
It's such a struggle back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
And now for some reason, they're just always empty.
Yeah, exactly. And nowadays, you know, I'm just going to back in the days, I used to go to the library and I was like, oh, this book. And now I go to, to the local brewery and do the same thing. But this is pretty good.
Massive cheers to you.
It said, cheers. It actually said, smooth, creamy porter. And it is.
This is, still smells amazing. The color is still amazing. This came out in October. Oh. So New England, typically you want to drink it a bit fresh in that. But Overhop seems to have mastered their canning process, and they stay quite fresh for quite some time, longer than most people would expect. So cheers to you.
Sure.
Talk to me about the Finnish craft beer scene. I've never been to Finland. I've toured all over Europe numerous times, and I think Cryptopsy's actually only played in Finland once with Lord Worm, and I heard it was a disaster of a show. I heard that there was hardly any people there, and I heard that they party like maniacs on the ferry.
Yeah, that's usually... they were coming from Sweden, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, actually, our drummer was talking about that show over here, because he was at the show, drummer Fandocious back then, and it was 2006.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard it was not a good turnout.
he didn't tell me about that, but yeah.
So talk to me about the craft beer scene going on in Finland. What's going on there?
I really like how it's going, actually, and that's why I'm sadly don't have any local beers, because there's this big brewery back in my hometown that had really, really nice, experimental. It used to be because we just came off the sauna, so I actually had some of the basic beer, you know, lager, because I had a cold lager. And this is what the Finnish, you know, beer industry was about until maybe 6 years ago, maybe, and when it sort of exploded. And there was some good beers around already, but nothing really different, nothing that really, you know, like it was good basic beer. But yeah, 5-6 years ago, it really started booming and people actually tried to sort of break the basic idea you have of beer. And yeah, there's also like, I think, you know, with the boom of like also these like beer festivals all over Finland that are, well, before the apocalypse, they were like selling really well. And it's sort of, yeah, really, really good right now. There's around where I am from, I think there's three main breweries. It's a small town, 40,000 people live in the city. And we have three really, really great breweries that actually you can find in the normal grocery stores. Or, and yeah, I have a couple of friends doing really good beers that also are available all over Finland. So yeah.
That's exciting. Yeah. I have to come.
Yeah.
Somebody book Cryptopsy, yeah, bring us to Finland.
Yeah. yeah. Finland used to be, you know, like more, let's say like a booze country.
hard liquor, you're meaning.
Yeah, exactly.
I've interviewed many, many Swedish musicians, and they always tell me about how to get beer, you have to go to the special store, the special store. I can't remember the name right now, because if not, it's going to be low ABV beers, like below 3%. Is it like that in Finland as well?
It used to be until a couple of years back when they changed the law. We could have until 4.6. I think the strongest we could have was 4.9 before. So all the craft beers were in those designated monopoly alcohol stores. But now they changed it up to 5.5. So you can actually have some pretty good craft beers, you know, that they don't have to dilute them with water.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Which is sadly what they do, you know, they when they have to take them down from like 6.5 to 5.5.
That would be blasphemy. I don't like it. Let's jump into the soundtrack of your youth. I am curious about this, having young parents. What music was playing in your household when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Oh, I was really lucky actually with the music taste at home. And we had my dad, he's a big prog guy. So we listened to Pink Floyd, Genesis. We have Marillion, Procol Harum, Jethro Tull. Yeah, that's what I grew up to. So yeah.
What would have been the first piece of music, the first artist, the first CD, the first album that you brought into the house and showcased it to your parents? To their dismay or to their enjoyment?
Yeah, that would be, is it 88 or 89? Alice Cooper, Thrash. That's the first album I bought myself. It was on sale in the CD store. So I think I paid like around, in dollars, probably around $12 or something for it. Back then, yeah. And that's the first album that I bought myself for myself.
What was your parents' reaction to that?
No, it was good. You know, Alice Cooper, Hey Stupid, 2 years later for Christmas. So it couldn't be that bad.
That's amazing. I love that.
No, but yeah, that's also, you know, grew up around like Black Sabbath and stuff like that. So yeah.
It wasn't that Whitesnake. Far of a, yeah, of, no, a, of a leap.
No, yeah, exactly.
Especially the Cooper. Cooper's like music is quite accessible. It's more of his imagery that's more shocking.
Yeah. And that was probably what was, you know, sort of why I paid attention to it, because we had this British channel where they showed, you know, like He-Man, Transformers back then, and all this the cool stuff you wanted to watch. And they also had music videos. And I remember Alice Cooper, you know, hanging from the chains. And that's why, you know, in Poison video. And yeah, and that's what sold me on Alice Cooper.
So. Love it. So that it's like horror movies. And I've been saying a lot on the podcast recently. It's like, I remember being young, seeing the imagery, the VHS cassettes at the video store and being afraid, but super intrigued. as to what is this movie, The Howling. For some reason, The Howling has stuck with me. Seeing that cover and being like, that's scary, and I don't want to watch it, but I definitely want to know what that is. And it's the same thing with metal. How about that? Your first live music experience. Do you remember the first show or performance that you went to go see?
Yeah, well, I grew up with a musician dad, so the first bands I saw was, of course, my dad's band.
What did he play? What instrument?
They played. He's a drummer.
Oh, cool!
I went to their shows when I was a kid with my mom, and you know, but that was cover bands, cover songs. They even played some good tunes like Pink Floyd and stuff like that. I think they played a lot of Eagles and stuff like that as well. But yeah, Beatles. But the first like voluntary show, like where I had tickets for, you know, that I was on the
sorry
on
Dad.
The guest list. Yeah.
What would be that for? What was the first one you had the ticket for?
Yeah, that would, I think it was 1990. Europe. They were playing in the town next to me. It wasn't, you know, it was the Prisoners in Paradise album. Yeah, I don't know if you remember that album, but
I do know that the Final Countdown was my song with my dad, and I was like, Dad, play it again. It was that song. I have that memory in the car, which is where I discovered metal, because my dad was like a hair metal, hard rock type fan of metal.
Yeah. I'm not sure if Prisoners in Paradise, the album, is the album after Final Countdown.
I think it might be. Could the be. Timing sort of makes sense in my mind.
Yeah, exactly. And it was that tour. And my dad bought me the tickets, and I went with my dad, my best friend, and my best friend's dad.
What was that night like? Do you remember the experience of being in an arena, probably, because they're enormous at that point?
Yeah. It was like a, you know, like a hockey, like, yeah. Lots of people there. The feeling was really awesome. I remember it was loud. It was really loud. And they had this, which probably would look right now really like really cheap, but they had this pyrotechnics that were really cool, and I guess they were like, you know, like firecrackers kind of small, like, things like shooting from everywhere. But yeah, they were not, you know, any big like confetti bombs or anything like that. But yeah, there was. But yeah, no, I was blown away. I'm a bit let down because on the tour before the Final Countdown tour that came to the same city, they played Final Countdown twice. But yeah,
wow, imagine doing that. It's like such a hit, you gotta play it twice. You were in the bathroom, you missed it, here's Phobophile again.
Exactly. They played it, I think they started it off with it, and then the encore was also, I have a friend that was on that gig, and he said like they played Final Countdown two times.
That's so funny. We would never.
But
do
they
that.
Only played it once.
How about your first time on stage?
Oh yeah. Well, here again, is it like voluntary?
No, we can do forced. Let's start with the forced one. That's interesting, and then we can dance.
I was always sort of. Already when I was 6, 7, I was already forced into doing music stuff in school. So I was always like singing songs and stuff like that. Back then.
Is that like everyone was doing that because it's just a part of the culture?
Yeah, everyone had all, we had all this kind of, you know, for Christmas, we had this place and everything. And I ended up singing quite a lot of those.
Yeah, it's what happens when you're the talented one, right? You're the talented one. They're like, you're the one that's going to sing more than everyone else.
I had quite bigger roles in those because there was people that had like one or two lines, and then my first real gig was where would that be? Mid 90s something. Cover band, was studying bass back then. I think it's like, we don't have the same school system here, so it's a little bit different. I think it's like eighth grade or something, maybe. So I was like,
eighth grade would be 14.
Yeah, 14, 15 ish. And I played cover gig.
Wow, like at a club
singing. Yeah, it was. The school, they organized into kind of a club. It was more like a cafe maybe, but
that's amazing. But still, it's a difference and sweet into it. Yeah. I hate to compare you guys, but art is so important, and the government appreciates it and gives a lot of funding towards it. Very different than the United States, let's say. Quebec, we're a little bit better. Definitely. Canada, we're a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But you guys are really, really lucky to have that exposed, much to your dismay.
Oh, yeah.
Much to your dismay being young and having to perform. Do you remember being nervous, having to learn all these lines, having to learn all these things? Do you remember singing and approaching these gigs? Did you have a feeling of dread, or did you just... Some kids just love it. Some kids are natural born performers. Obviously, you're a performer, but some kids are just kid superstars.
I was super nervous before. Always, you know, during these kind of events, it was the before was always the worst. But when I got there, when I was at, you know, I was playing bass, like then I was studying bass. But again, I was sort of forced into singing as well. We did some CC Top, Stevie Ray Vaughan, I think. Cool. Anyway, it was actually, and that's probably the first gig. And it was actually, it's weird, but it was all over the newspapers and everything, in the local newspapers.
Really?
Back then. Yeah.
So your first taste of fame.
yeah. That was actually, it was weird because it was like the first gig ever that I did as a bass player and a singer and like real gig. And it was in the newspaper.
It's only down from there, but forget VAC.
I think it was like 1 year later. Then we started my first like metal band, and that band then was it 90? That would be 98, I think. And then I had the first like gig that we booked ourselves that we did, and
how did that go? Were you guys ready?
That was really weird because I was super nervous, and you know, it was the first time that you really show off, you know, like the music that you are doing, that you have made yourself.
Not a cover,
yeah, exactly. Oh, well, we played one cover, 97 or 98, I don't remember, but I need to check. 98 probably, but I think we went into the studio to record our first demo, so it should be 98. But that was really awesome because all our friends, they have been hanging around at that rehearsal place that we had back then, and everybody was looking forward to the gig. And then after the show, people were like just running towards the stage, and it was like everybody was like, "Yeah, that was so awesome! Yeah, that was so cool!" And
I remember a gig like that for myself. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I was 16 back then, so it was
That's amazing. How about harsh vocals, extreme vocals? When did you tackle those? Was it another one of those? You can sing, you're sort of forced into it. You're going to be the singer as well. Like you're the bassist, but you can also sing. So you're obviously going to be, I've spoken to so many people and that is how they fell into extreme vocals.
Yeah.
How did you tackle extreme vocals versus just clean vocals?
We were a three-piece band in the black metal, like melodic black metal-ish kind of band. I'm going to do some small commercial here. Yeah, we actually released a album that we did in 2000. It was supposed, you know, to come out in 2020 as a 20-year anniversary, but because of Corona, of course, it was delayed. But yeah, we have a vinyl out of the 2000 release we did with that band Twilight Moon, it's called. It was actually for that band that I started with Screaming Vocals. Yeah, I was the bass player of the band. We were three piece, but guitar player, drummer, and me playing bass. And since I had the easiest part to play. Yeah. Because
bassists apparently do nothing, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I was sort of prepared for it because I always wanted to be a singer. You know, I have lots of old pictures of me, for example. Yeah, when I was talking about Lego, I have a picture of me. I'm being like, I think I'm like 6 or 7, that I built myself a microphone from Lego that I'm singing. Yeah, so I was from a like early age sort of prepared to be the singer. And so I tackled this really well, and I went fully into it. I had no idea how to do it. I had no really like friends my age, you know. Back then, you know, age was a big thing. So we were 15, and yeah, the singers that I knew, they were like almost 20.
I was exactly the same way. Anyone older than me was so damn cool, and I was not worried.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't dare to you know, contact and ask advice. Actually, the singer of And Oceans, he was already then screaming back then. But I knew the guys back then already, but I never dared to ask any advice or anything. And, you know, there were no YouTubes or anything. So it was trial and error, you know, and it was honey tea, cough pastilles, cough drops,
all the secrets.
And we were rehearsing a lot. It was like 3-4 times every week. And sometimes it sounded good. And you were like, oh, it doesn't hurt. Then, you know, you go 2 days later and it's terrible. It hurts a lot. I couldn't speak for 3 days.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And I was in school, of course. High school back then. So, so speaking was sort of crucial, but I was like,
Wow. Okay. Trial by fire to manage your techniques. And you hit the nail on the head that nowadays young people are extremely lucky and fortunate to have the internet, to have people like David Benitez of Extreme Vocal Institute.
I love that guy.
He's amazing. Vox and Hops alumni, love him to death. To have Mary Zimmer from Voice Hacks, another Vox and Hops alumni, mm-hmm. love her.
She's also great.
Just these people that Melissa Cross, of course, which is what I used when I started screaming, to learn all these techniques. Whereas back in the day, we just had to do it.
Yeah, we didn't have any PA or anything back then. Okay. So I was screaming to a bass amp, of course, because I had a new bass amp, so I could use my old bass amp to scream. Anyway,
the good old days.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a Heavy Montreal Presents Vox and Hops episode, and I know that Montreal loves Fintrell, so I want to hear a funny anecdote, something that comes to mind when I say playing Montreal. What comes to mind when you think of Montreal?
I remember, like, it's not probably funny or anything, but, you know, it's a cool memory. First time I went to North America in 2007, I think it was. We did the first, like, all-around North America tour. We started off, in Springfield, Virginia, and then we went, you know, up the East Coast, played some really terrible gig in New Hampshire. That was really terrible. And the day after, we went to Montreal, Club Soda. Is it still?
That's totally still alive, yeah.
But yeah, Club Soda was the first. And, you know, we had some atrocious shows in on the US side, like New Hampshire, I remember, because people didn't want to move on the gigs at all. They were like, what's going on? Why, you know, why aren't people moving? And there was this one guy, he took off his shirt and he started like waving it around, and there was like security all over him. They maced him and dragged him
outside. Holy shit. Not in Montreal, that.
No, that New Hampshire somewhere. Okay, I don't remember the city, but it was terrible. And, you know, after the show, the the organizers, the promoters of the show, they came like, oh, sorry, there was a close moment over there during the show, but we took care of it.
I was like, dude, we were loving that. You guys don't understand what this is.
There was one guy that dared to have fun, and he was like punished for it. And the day after, you know, it was sort of that on the U.S. side, it was terrible. And when we crossed the border, we crossed during the night, and then Montreal was the day after, and Club Soda. Yeah, you know, you had catering, you had food, you had showers, you had, you know, all the commodities. And I think it was hundreds of tickets were sold. I don't remember how many hundreds, 700, 800, 900 tickets, something like that. And it was packed. And it was wild marsh pits. It was people shouting along. There was, you know, they knew the songs, everything. And we were like, oh, yes, oh, finally.
Like, refill your reservoir. Yeah. This is why we do this. Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Stroke and, my ego. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. No, but yeah, that's, but yeah, that was so much like, so much fun. And yeah, and I actually have another story from that one day. I just it's the same day, because I have a problem with my right ear. Yeah, the canal that goes in it should be like tilted this way, so everything comes out, but from some reason it's like this, so everything goes like back into my ear, and it gets really infected really easily. And on the US side during that tour, everything, I think I slept with like earplugs in, because yeah, we have snorers in the band, so I slept with earplugs, and it went really deep, and you know, started to get infected. And yeah, since we didn't have any health insurance, and I had like this all around insurance, but I would have to pay the visit first and then get the money back when I get back to Finland. And to get that, you know, the drops that you put in your ear would have been, I think it was like $1,700 or something like that.
The US are great at a lot of things. Healthcare is not one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. And especially, you know, it's okay nowadays. I have great, you know, medical insurance. Mm-hmm. When I come there. Oh. So
you've learned from experience.
Yeah, I learned. So our tour manager just thought, is it any chance that we can wait until we get across to Canada? So yeah, so I was like, okay, that's 3 days to go, but let's do it. And I was just, yeah, so I was doing like, you know, the generic stuff you could get from CVS and stuff like that. But yeah. But when we got to Canada, we went, I think, to like a hospital, to the, not emergency, but you know, you go, yeah, that everyone can go
yeah,
to.
Yeah, we have yeah. clinics, walking yeah, clinics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, I paid $40 for it. For the, yeah, and I got my ear drops.
Amazing.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.
Let's talk about a very, very busy year. 2020 was a massive year. We talked about earlier, three albums, massive albums, all on big labels. Take me to your Pandemic Blues. It probably got very dark. We met actually during the pandemic blues at the Cruachan, one of their virtual pubs. That's how we first mm-hmm. got into contact with each other.
Exactly.
So that was fun. That kept me feeling good during my pandemic blues, doing things like that.
Yeah, that was the idea probably behind it. And yeah, well, as Keith, you know, the guitar player of Cruachan, yeah, he said that, yeah, because all the bars are closed, let's like start a virtual bar. Yeah, that was a really cool night, and I needed that back then. It was
so to have everything taken away from you, not working. What did you have to do to pull yourself out of the funk?
Oh, well, that year sort of didn't go well at all. You know, I had all these albums, everything was going well, you know, until the spring. And but I think it was in November, you know, this is in Finland, we have a social security system, so I could get some like unemployment money. It's terrible process, and it's lots of paperwork, and it's you have to wait for a while. You have to get the money, but at some point you get this like welfare checks, and so I could live off it. I got like I think 80% of my rent they paid off, and then I got some money, but it wasn't, you know, really really big. But they also sort of take care of unemployed people, and they sent me an email about, you know, like available courses to take, you know, if you wanted to like get your education to a next level or something. And they had this virtual event producer kind of course that you did. I think it's like 100 days. Yeah.
Wow.
So okay. it's like 4 months course that they sort of, yeah, if you are now unemployed, you are applying for those checks, so you can apply to this course for free. And we'll, you know, the state is going to pay for the course. And it was like multiple hundred euros course. So I'm like, oh yeah, I have nothing to do. There's no gigs inside. I'll do that. And I went to take the course, got a nice like internship at like a gaming company actually to produce their sort of like playing event online. They have this like events that they play other developers games, and I was there like doing streams and interviewing like the developers behind the games, and it was actually pretty cool, and it sort of opened up lots of different things. And so in beginning of last year I was contacted by a camp that's going on every summer that is like focused on rock music. That is like 1 week for teenagers. And they wanted to do, they had this virtual camp going on, and they wanted me to join, to talk to the kids about, you know, being a musician and about screaming, because it's focused on rock and metal. And I did a couple of lessons with I think we had 24 teenagers there, and then we started with the organizers behind Rock Camp to think about like full-on year education. And we closed on yesterday, no, the week before. We the first year is starting next week, and we had 21 kids sign up for like year-round sort of school kind of. Well, it's after then, you know, the normal school. So it's like from 4 p.m. until 8 p.m., something like that. Yeah.
It's so cool.
We're a couple of artists. We're a bunch of artists. We're 12, 13 people right now, Finnish rock and metal scene, that are going to teach kids how to rock.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I was definitely going to talk about it. It was actually the next thing I had on my list.
Yeah.
Rock camp. It's so damn cool. I wish, as a 15-year-old kid, how old are these people that are enrolled?
It's open for 14 to 25.
Amazing. So imagine being like a 14, 18-year-old kid, and then you want to be, you aspire to, and then you get to go hang out with the singer of Finn Troll, and he's going to teach you how to scream. You know, imagine you had that back when you were 15. The advantage that you would have over everyone else. Hypothetically, these kids could eventually go on tour with you one day.
Yeah,
you know definitely. What I mean? And are they, are there Finn Troll fans is another question, or like fans of you?
Yeah.
Do they realize who you are?
Yeah. You know, Finn Troll had never been a big band in Finland. So,
really? Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. No, we have been always, 95% have been outside of Finland. So, but yeah, they know the albums, some of them, but we have some bigger stars over there that the kids definitely know. So, that's really cool. Having the first guitar player, for example, from Children of Bodom is there teaching. So,
what are kids learning? What would be, are there like more popular stuff than other stuff? Is there a song you're fed up of teaching?
Actually, we haven't started it yet because it's, we are starting on Monday, the first year ever since 2009. It's been around, but it's always been a summer. Yeah.
So the kids would arrive for a week. Is it like a sleepaway thing?
Yeah.
Okay. So they arrive, they live there, and then basically they end up playing a show probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Saturday. So it's from Monday to Saturday.
Have you been shocked with some of their musical prowess? Are there people that are just like so damn talented that you know are going to go on somewhere if they put the, you know, you could be the most talented person in the world, and we know this, but to be in a successful band one day, you have to have a lot of the other things that line up as well. Being in the right place at the right time, not being an asshole really helps too.
One of our kids, he's not a kid, he's a young guy now. I think he's 15 now. Yeah. He won in 2020, won the Young Guitarist of the Year, like it's worldwide competition, and he won it. Yeah, so he was, for example, he's awesome guitar player. He's actually signed up, but not for guitar playing. He's, I'm going to teach him sound engineering, how to record demos and stuff like that. Yeah. But with the school, I'm actually not going to be that much of a teacher because I have so much to do with the administrative, stuff of the school. So I'm actually going to be there doing all the stuff behind everything to make everything work. So it's weird that it turned out that I'm the...
So this is like a silver lining of COVID for you, that this year, 2020, took everything away from you, but now you've gained this whole new skill set from the training program that you took through the government, and now you have this whole thing. So now what's resonating in my mind is the balance in the future when the floodgates open and your numerous projects all want to tour and do stuff, and Rock Camp still wants you to be a part of. How are you going to balance everything?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be terrible. but since we can do it's like everything with Rock Camp, we can do maybe distance working, 90% probably, I will do during day, depending of course, if I'm in America, it might be, impossible to do because of the time difference. Could be the other way around. If I'm in Asia or something, then it's probably doable. But, I sort of, at some point, it's sad to say, but I have a little bit given up on gigs right now because everything,
I know. Yeah. It's because they took it from us, and then they said we could have it again, and then they took it from us again. That's why.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I haven't been going that far to plan what's gonna happen when we can have gigs again, because I sort of don't know if we're gonna have gigs again in the foreseeable future.
They'll come back. They're gonna come back.
Yeah, they'll definitely come back. With all the bands as well, we are not, I'm not 23 anymore. Like I was back then when I came to Montreal the first time, I was I was 23.
good parties, I can imagine.
Definitely. But yeah, you know, we're not going to do any kind of like murder tours with any of my bands. Yeah, probably ever again.
But I do understand what you're saying, that we're getting older, doing the right tours, the smart tours, for our health, for the health of the band, and to hit the key markets and then leave, and then you can come back again later and hit the B markets and the C markets. But to organize it like that is much more healthier for everyone, because the show you're going to put on is going to be much stronger, because you're going to be in shape, you're not going to be exhausted, and the mental health of the band is crucial, especially as we get older and we have more and more things at home that want, that have like pieces of our mind. Is always, we go on tour and then we have pieces of our mind that's still at home, such as families, jobs, children, you know, friends and stuff, obligations. So as we get older, the right tours are the right decisions, in my opinion as well. But how do you balance all this creative stuff? That's to be a part of so many projects. How do you keep being creative?
It's weird because I'm sort of doing some solo stuff as well.
Right, amazing. Now. Are you stealing Rock Camp Kids?
I might. Let's see. Yeah. No, but
that's good news. Cool. Just, good for you. I was on the couch last night and I was like, maybe one day I could do a solo thing. Yeah.
I've been holding back for so many years because I play in like everything a bit except drums. So,
okay, which is funny because your dad was the drummer, which is probably why you don't play drums, because it was your dad's thing.
We had the drum kit around. My dad even, you know, he was sort of like, here's the drums. You can go play whenever you want.
And your metalhead rebellious self was like, hell no.
No, it was more like, how does
I've, this I've watched you carry your gear into a room. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I had no idea. You know, I have to do more than two times at the same time. Yeah. Why do I need my feet to play music?
It's for dancing, but
yeah.
So no, the drums didn't.
Yeah, might happen. I'm not sure, but it's always because some persons, for example, singers that have been. They have multiple bands, or are just, you know, say that somebody booked them for another band. They do the same thing they do in that band. And I have always created, you know, my own identity for that band. I'm really sort of really, really picky about, you know, copying stuff from my other works to do, blah, blah, blah. So I don't want to have, for example, take Finchall stuff into And Oceans. I don't want to take Dispute stuff into Finchall and, you know, like that. It's always like really like balance going on. But as I was talking about solo project, you know, I haven't been sleeping lately because of going to bed and I have all these like crazy ideas in my head and I have to write them down. So after coming back from rock camp stuff during the day, then I come home, I just like blank, so like zone out for a couple of hours and then my brain starts working again. And yeah, so I've been up the last night writing stuff for my solo.
Very exciting
thing, but yeah. Yeah, let's see what happens.
It's best to get it out, though. You're doing the right thing. As opposed to keeping it in there, it's best to just get it out. And especially if you're in that creative moment, right, then you want to capture that.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
And who knows when it will come back.
And when it feels like, oh, this, I'm really having something good here. Do I want to sleep and forget about it?
No. Or it'll drive you crazy.
Am I going to spend 5 minutes writing it down on my phone? You know? Yeah.
Amazing. So I'm excited for that. So we'll see where that goes. Eventual touring it, if you know, we said gigs are in the future, but it'd be something you want to tour, or just something you're going to put out into the world and just be happy.
I think it's going to be like only releasing something.
Okay. Okay. You don't need another cog. In-
no, I don't need another twin bed right now. You never know.
Fintrol feels like, I was listening to it as I showed you earlier with my son. It feels like a fun party. Feels like people are there drinking, enjoying themselves. Have you ever made a Fintrol beer?
Sadly, not yet. I'm working with a brewery over here in Finland that it'd be like a craft beer place that they have really wanted to do. But it was supposed to happen last year when the new album came out. We were supposed to, because they are involved in a major chain here in stores in Finland. So we were supposed to get the beer out to those stores. And also because if, you know, those stores that they are working with, they also they sell beers to bars as well. So
Amazing. So
which would have been, for us, really easy to work with, because they would have, you know, if
the beer would have been everywhere.
And a finished tour, we could have them in the venue, in the bars over there. Yeah,
because it is extremely, anyone listening, beer is a horrible merch item. It's a nightmare to work with. There are so many legal laws.
Archaic
laws. Yeah. I'll add to that. Mm-hmm. Especially here in Canada, United States is a nightmare.
Finland isn't better.
So I understand where you're going with this. That it would be, if it's one person that can handle everything, that makes you guys' life just so much easier.
Yeah, but those tapping into the major supplier, it would have been sort of easy to get them to the bars, because it would have been only for the bars to order it and us telling them sort of to order it. And that would have been, you know.
So don't give any spoilers there, but... You could give some. What style of beer would you hope to have for Fintrol? You don't have to say what the one was that you were going to do, but it could be that one.
No, it was depending on, because I'm, you know, big, let's say like it's seasonal, you know. I know many wine drinkers, they drink white wines during the summertime.
Okay, yeah. And stouts in the summer.
Red wine during the winter.
I see where you're going
with this. Yeah, so winter, autumn is sort of dark stuff, and spring is light stuff. And it was supposed to be an autumn beer, so it would have been a dark one, and it would have been awesome. I'm gonna spoil something, because this was kind of funny. The thing why we didn't do it is because we couldn't get our hands on tar.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
Because the company that was gonna supply us with real tar, they couldn't afford it because of coronavirus to make their own tar.
Interesting. So,
yeah. But yeah.
I love it. one last question, wrap up question, classic wrap up question for Vox and Hops. It probably doesn't happen to you very often because you're very busy. You're in many, many projects. You're running Rock Camp. It's not Friday yet, but he's cracking a new beer. It probably doesn't happen to you very often, but every once in a while it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Hangover cure. Right now, nowadays, it's sparkling water right now.
I like that.
But back in the days, it used to be a really stiff shot of vodka that would have been.
That's pain. Probably,
50-50 orange juice, 50-50 vodka.
Okay, that's not so bad. Yeah.
Down the hatch, and here we go, sound check.
the tour hangover cure. I love that. Sparkling. I remember touring Europe for the first time and not liking sparkling water. But now I drink it by the gallon. I love it. Anyway.
it's
an American.
It's so much.
We have to get used to stuff, right?
But we have a really nice one here that's called, it's called double salt. So it has double the electrolytes, and
it works. I love it.
Nowadays it's the best thing.
Thank you so much for taking the time, hanging out with me, talking about your life, music and craft beer. This is an absolute pleasure, and I can't wait to hang out again in the flesh. Cheers.
Yeah, see you in Montreal, man.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. This was an awesome, awesome conversation. I really had so much fun connecting with Matthias. We really had a blast. I cannot wait to hang out with him in the flesh so that we can have even more fun together. Massive, massive cheers to Matthias for hanging out with me. It was an absolute blast. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast's mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive 2 emails a month that will let you know exactly what has been going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You'll get to see all the episodes which I've dropped if I've been a guest on someone else's podcast. You'll also get to see all of the albums which the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently. And you'll get to see which bands Jerry Monk, the Metal Architect, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is available on both Apple Music and Spotify. There is just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I'd hate for you to miss a single thing, so sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a glorious, glorious rest of the week. I will be back next week with a massive episode on Tuesday with Corpse Grinder. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.